Hello, hello, and welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. I am Mo Abdelbaki, and today is Wednesday the 10th of July. Had to think about it for a second. It is the 10th of July, and 2024, for that matter. How are you? How have you been doing? What's your summer been like? That almost sounded like the name of someone. Summer been like. That would be a good character in a comic book. Yes, his name is Summer been like. And he's one of those guys, you know, just one of those guys Summer been like. Forget it. It's not even worth considering or even not considering. So don't consider it or consider it. It's up to you. You do your own thing. It's your thing. Do what you want to do. And that's the way it is. Forget it. All right. A lot of forgetting going on. What in the world can we do? So, July. And what a July it's been. It's been hot. It's been kind of one of those things. You know, one of my pet peeves has been, and it literally a pet peeve, has been fireworks. Fireworks that scare the wits out of puppies and kitties and macaws and macaques. And if you have a macaque, good luck to you. But scare the you know, just poor little critters and wild animals and people who have PTSD and who have heart problems and have, you know, just, it's just no fun, especially the ones that sound like, you know, cannonballs being set off and mortars and all that. It's not fun and it's not fair. Well, our new little puppy, Coco is her name, she didn't even care, didn't even notice these big kabooms going off, and she was like, well, I don't even care. I was so much so that I was wondering, can she hear? And yes, she does hear. She just did not even notice. So it made me wonder, does this have to do with the attitude of the owners? Maybe that's it, or maybe she just doesn't know to be scared of them yet. So hopefully this will be the case forever and ever and ever. I sure hope so. I sure hope she doesn't suddenly develop a fear of the fireworks. I sure hope not, because poor Trudy was just terrified of fireworks and wouldn't go outside and would get bladder infections after every 4th of July. It was just miserable. Coco's not, you know, not afraid of them. So far, first 4th of July, and they're still setting them off at night. So we've decided that part of it is our attitude. So we're going to try not to instill her with that fear, which leads me to believe that a lot of what happens in the world is because of our beliefs, our way of looking at things. And maybe there's something to that. You think that maybe we have the influence over a lot of people? You know, I don't mean that because of the metaphysical impact of it, although there is something to that. But perhaps you and I, especially when we have our kids around or our pets around, that maybe we do have more of an influence than we know. I know that my kids probably reflect a lot of my ideals, or at least they did until they came to their own senses, you know. There's something to think about there. There's been a lot I've been thinking about there. I was having a conversation with an oracle today. I do that. I pull out an oracle or two and have a conversation and say, okay, let's ask some questions. And I had an oracle basically say to me today that a friend who eventually betrays you was never a friend to begin with. And I thought, well, I don't know if I believe that. I don't know if I'm willing to entertain that concept. But the oracle was adamant about it. The oracle was quite adamant about it. It said, wait a minute, Mo. If you have a friend, even if that friend was a friend from childhood, who went on eventually to betray you, how can you consider that person to have been a friend any time in your life? And I'm really kind of arm wrestling with that idea, you know? What do you think? Mull that over, would you? Mull that over. And if you think about it, you know, you can drop me a line somewhere. I don't know how to do that anymore. I let my website go. I got tired of it. Tired of having a website for the past, well, decades. Especially since the website became more trouble than it was worth. Just way more trouble than it was worth. You know, just like, oh, come on, a website. Do I have to really put this much work into something that is there just basically to prove that I'm alive? Now, you can always get through to me through Facebook. I'm on Facebook, and you can get to me. I'm Mo Tarot, I think it is, on Facebook. I have a Facebook page, and I don't know exactly how to find myself there. But I don't do much on it anymore because it's just there. I'm affiliated through 12Listen on Facebook. But I think it's Mo Abdelbaki, something like that. Well, that's my personal page. And I don't do a whole lot there either. You know, it's just mostly old high school friends and stuff like that. But I do have a Facebook page that is a business page. And it might even be Mo Tarot. I'm not sure anymore. I guess I should check on that before I open my app, you know. But what do you think about that idea? That if you have a... Because this oracle was kind of coming from the standpoint that there is no concept of time in that other dimension. Time is just a fourth dimension. And when you, you know, when you stand back from that dimension, it can see all of it in one fell swoop. So it's like looking at a table from a distance. You know, we sit at a table, we don't see the whole table at once. But some of these other dimensions, you pull back from it, and you can see the whole table at once, including underneath it and, you know, everything. So it's like if someone sees the whole history of a friendship, well, you're going to say, well, that person wasn't a friend and possibly was never a friend. I don't know. What do you think about that? So if you have someone in your life that you consider to be a really close friend and someone that you loved, and eventually they absolutely betrayed you, you know, put a shiv right in between your ribs, let's say, and not literally, but figuratively, were they ever a friend? See, I'm really thinking about that. I'm really kind of putting that in my head and wondering, is that valid or not? So, something I'm kind of struggling with on my own. Because I've got a couple of people who've done that to me in my life. And on the other hand, there are people that you necessarily haven't gotten along with very well who turned out to be really quite decent in the long run. You go, wow, that someone was really quite nice in the long run. Were they always someone that wasn't necessarily good in your life? These are interesting questions. The oracle didn't really go after that second one, but really went after the first and said, you know, pal, don't be dense. That first person that we're talking about never was your friend. And if you stop and think about it, if you go back and mull it over, you'll see that it's true. And I have been. And I'm beginning to see that perhaps that's the case. That person is no longer on the planet with me. Well, isn't. Just isn't alive. And yet I'm still finding these soft spots, even though the person really did some dastardly things. And of course, that person may have considered that I did some dastardly, well, one thing in particular. I was just being honest, you know? Honesty. Honesty can get you into a world of hurt. Really can. Fascinating. So, there it is. You know, it's just kind of a conundrum in some ways, But I never did what that person did. That's for sure. That's for sure. So it's simply, I don't know. I'm just rambling now. But I'm still struggling with that, what that oracle put to me. Said, think about it, Mo. Think about it carefully, because, Mo, you're wrong. That person was never your friend. And yet that person was like a brother to me for many, many years. Of course, my brothers, you know, are wonderful guys. Wonderful guys. But there have been times when we haven't always seen eye to eye about everything. It's a fascinating, fascinating question. Anyway, today's show is about something completely different. Something I find to be quite important and very intriguing to me. And that is the concept of mastery. Mastery. What is mastery? Well, mastery is going after something. Going after something and trying to make it your own. Going after something and trying to completely, master it. I mean, we know what a master is, someone who has the ability to take on something and really get it all the way, you know, perfect it, make it their own, make it something that they can do completely, make it something that they can, well, master. I mean, it really is in the word, isn't it? And there are people who are, I'm considered a tarot master, and I'm going to own it and say, you're darn tootin' I am. I did tarot for a very, very long time. I still do tarot. I work with it quite often. I consider myself to be an I Ching master, because I've been working with the I Ching since 1968. It's the better part of my lifetime, you know. I've been doing Vedic astrology only for about 30-some years. I came to that kind of later on. I've been doing astrology for longer, but it didn't make a whole lot of sense to me until I understood it on an intellectual level, but not on a practicing level until I got into Vedic. Palmistry I've been doing for a very long time. Picked up a book when I was a kid and started, you know, looking at people's palms, saying, okay, using what I knew about them and working with palmistry. I mean, I've been doing a lot of this stuff for a very, very long time, and practical usage of it. Started with Ouija boards when I was a kid. Not that I'm a master of the Ouija board, but you get to where you kind of know what's what. I've tried to put my hand to a lot of stuff. I'm not a master knitter, but I know how to knit. I'm not a master crocheter, but I know how to crochet. My mother was a master knitter. She could knit a sweater in a day, almost. She was really fast, and she could eyeball it. You know, she could look at you and say, okay, I'll do this, I'll do that. And she was pretty amazing. She was really fast. No one starts out a master, I don't think. Some people, maybe they do, I don't know. But when you spend, I mean, I've been reading tarot cards for well over 50 years. I studied the Aleister Crowley deck for over 45, 46, 7, I don't know, a long, long time. And cracked his codes, because I was a lunatic. I was so into it. He was a master of a lot of things. He really was. He was obsessive. Mastery takes a certain obsession. I became pretty good at tying knots, fancy sailor types of knots. Some people do macrame, and that's square knotting, you know, and that wasn't what I was doing. I was doing star knots, fancy star knots, and some really kind of fancy ornamental stuff, which I absolutely loved. Absolutely loved. And then I kind of got over it. I'm one who, I'm obsessive. I get into things and I don't always master things. That's not what's important for me as much as the experience of it. But this show today, this discussion today, let's call it a discussion, is about the concept of mastery and why I think it's important. And I do think it's important. It's not about actually mastering something. It's about striving for the mastery of something. And we're going to talk about that today and why I do think it's important. I really think it is. First of all, it's interesting. It's very interesting to pick something and work on it. For example, I like calligraphy. I've liked it for a long, long time. I had lousy handwriting for a long time. I still think I have lousy handwriting. And I work on it, not all the time, but I do work on it. I'm a writer, and I don't think I'm a great writer, but I don't know. Sometimes things come out all right, and other times I don't think they come out very well at all. It's a matter of, you know, just it's hard work to write and to get your head into the right place, you know, and to know what you're doing and to make things come out the way you want them to come out. Cervantes said that the pen is the tongue of the mind, you know, and I think that's really pretty far out. That's pretty clever, because that really is what it's about. It's trying to get your thoughts out, and to do so in a way that is satisfying. But, of course, now we have an absolute amazing set of tools in front of us. In the beginning, it was the typewriter, and now, of course, the typewriter's been replaced with computers, and you know, before that, it was word processors, and now we have AI, and AI is good for a lot of things. I wouldn't use it to replace my own words going on something, because I happen to like the process of writing. I like putting my words to something. I don't want a computer to do it for me. I don't want artificial intelligence to replace my intelligence, which is questionable a lot of the time. But that's the process that I enjoy, is working with words and being a wordsmith, as they say. That, to me, is the fascinating part of it. I'm often struck that so many authors drank heavily, like Eugene O'Neill or Ernest Hemingway or even Edgar Allan Poe or so many others who kind of crawled into a bottle or in some sort of intoxicant in order to do what they did, but they were masters of their art. You know, they really were. They were incredible authors and did such amazing things with words. Herman Melville, I don't know that he drank. I don't know that he did. But wrote one of the most beautiful collections of words in the English language. And I'm referring to Moby Dick, which if you've never read, most people who've heard me for any period of time go, oh God, no, he's going to talk about Moby Dick. But if you want to read some of the most beautiful, beautiful words in English strung together, read Moby Dick, because his use of the language was simply stunning. His ability to throw words together in such a way was masterful. He was a master of telling a story, but doing so in such a way that just absolutely stuns me. I still can pick up Moby Dick, open it to almost any page, and be absolutely flabbergasted by what I read. I once spent a day, an entire day reading just like a few paragraphs, just at his genius. And this is a man who was basically a customs officer, you know? But what a customs officer. I'm just, there's some authors who are so brilliant, have such a gift, who are beyond comprehension, geniuses. You know who else was good? Washington Irving. Washington Irving was a remarkable wordsmith who could just, it was funny while he was doing it. Dickens, Charles Dickens was an incredible author. He just had the ability to take words and throw them together, you know. I mean, the beginning of A Christmas Carol, you know. Marley was dead. There was no doubt about it. I mean, I just some things that were just so lovely, you know. I'm amazed by the way that people can describe things. And AI may do it beautifully as well and may continue to do so. But there's something about the spirit and the soul that comes out in writing, even in technical writing, that just astounds me. And so when I write, I try and write, and I like to write longhand And although I do write shorthand as well when I'm in a hurry and I'm trying to, because that's fun. You see, now there's the point. That's the point. When you try and master something, I started out writing shorthand, doing Pittman shorthand, because I thought it would be fun someday to write Jonathan Harker's journal from the story of Dracula, from Bram Stoker's Dracula, because Jonathan Harker's journal was written in shorthand, which is the only thing that saves him from being destroyed. Because if Dracula could have read what he wrote in his little scribblings, he would have just knocked him off right away. But he can't read his handwriting because it's in shorthand. And then I realized it was very probable that it could have been in Greg's shorthand as well. So I did Pittman first, and Pittman was very complicated, but I learned it, and then I forgot it. Had to forget it to do Greg's shorthand. But Pittman is fascinating because it's shapes, right? You know, these different shapes for different letters, but they're also based upon short versions. So you have a long line and then a shorter line, and then they have to be different strokes that are darker and lighter. And it's like, whoa! But and then I learned Greg's shorthand, which I kind of blew off as seeming arbitrary, but in fact, it's brilliant. It's a genius form of shorthand. And I learned some others. I learned one called Short Write. That was the first one I learned many, many years ago, probably 40 years ago, you know. And I was always fascinated with the concept. Did you know that Charles Dickens invented his own form of shorthand? You know, I say that a lot. It's a nasty habit, but we all have them, don't we? And Mark Twain decided that the English language was completely ridiculous, the way that it's spelled, and he decided that he would simplify it. So he tried to get it, I think he tried to take it to Congress and say that we should change the English language, the way that it's spelled, and simplify it. And that didn't work. He thought English was moronic. And Twain was a friend of Nikola Tesla's, one of the most brilliant human beings ever to walk the face of the earth. And you see these incredible minds, you know? You know. Got to stop saying, you know. I work on that. Doesn't, never catches, never works out. Ada Lovelace. Ada Lovelace. It's Lovelace, but, you know, people more politically correct say Lovelace. Who invented the computer, essentially, in many ways. Brilliant mathematician. Marie Curie, women as well as men, who have these minds, who have these unbelievable minds, who take information and crunch it down and come to these incredible conclusions, masters. They master things. The importance of mastery cannot be overblown. It's important to strive for something. It's interesting. Find an interest in life. I love this idea of mastery. I whittle. I'm not a master carver. I'm not a master whittler, you know? I'm not. But I love to do it. I have a lot of different interests. I love hieroglyphics. Started when I was about 12 years old. I never became a master hieroglyphic interpreter or writer or anything else, but I dally from time to time. I've never mastered it. I have a friend who is a master of hieroglyphics. He's a priest of Thoth. I consider him to be the priest of Thoth. He's the guy. When I met him in college, he stunned me. He absolutely blew me away. He knew stuff. Boy, did he know stuff. He still knows stuff. But he's very good. He knows stuff. But striving, the importance of striving to master something, to master disciplines, and not just one discipline, but to master many different disciplines, is vital to us. Why? Why is that? Why is it important? Because it challenges us. Because it nourishes the mind. It nourishes the intellect. And in doing so, it nourishes the psyche and the psychic part of who we are. Yes, the psychic part of who we are. And that's exactly what I mean. We all have some ability psychically. Now, last week I was beating myself up for that psychic part. Yes, I have a psychic part. And for years and years and years, I abhorred the word. I shunned it. I pushed it away. More than once, it has not done me any good. I have felt it. I have known that something was coming and not been able to do anything about it. And I've been upset by that. And I've said, well, what good is it then? Well, CNA, oh my God, CA and I, that's what I meant to say, CA and I, CA Brooks, who was a very wise person and very nice. We were doing some emailing back and forth, and I was talking about this, like, I know of a way to shut it off. I can do it if I want. And I've thought about through the years to say, I don't want this anymore, but I would be very hollow inside. I would feel terrible, I think, after a while. And she said, I said, what good is it if I can't use it to help my own life? And she said, well, we'd probably go mad if we could see our own world completely. And I thought about that. And she's right. I mean, there are times when I have seen things coming that has been horrible. And I thought, you know, maybe you're right there. You know, it is a tool that is given us, I'm convinced, to help others. There have been times when I have thought about hanging up the old chaps, you know, and I've decided not to, because I do help others, and I think that's important. Now I'm getting older, and I'm not doing it quite as much as I used to, because my life is, believe it or not, busier than it's ever been, especially with a puppy, whom I love absolutely completely. boy, is she a nut. It's funny how dogs are all different, just like people are all different. We've never had a puppy like her. She is just so different. She's a bit mischievous, and she knows it. She knows what is right and what isn't right. But she is just a love. Oh, I'm so in love with her. That's kind of nice, you know. They call it puppy love. Yeah. Yeah. And life goes on. Life goes on. I'm getting old. But I tell you what, I am more limber now. I can do more than I have been able to do in a long, long time. I can bend over and touch my toes, and I haven't been able to do that, and I don't know how long. I can walk faster, I can run. You wouldn't believe the things that I can suddenly do, because I have to. I thought I was getting decrepit. Nothing of the sort. I'm doing pretty well. All of the sudden. Why? Well, because you kind of have to. You learn something new. You master yourself a little bit. But why do you want to master something? Because it challenges you. It challenges you. And just like a change of venue in life challenges you. Man, I was, before we moved to Louisiana, my dad took a new job. He'd been in Colorado for years teaching at the university there, and they didn't treat him right. I'm just going to say it outright. They treated him lousy. Or lousily. That's probably better. That's not even a word. But Louisiana knew who he was. They knew what they had when they got him. And they immediately treated him better in the first day than he'd been treated in 16 years at Colorado State. And there was some discrimination there, and I'm just going to say it. They can challenge me if they want. No one listens from there. That's fine. But it's the truth. And so we up and moved. And I was challenged. Really challenged. We all were. But I went from being burned out and dried out like the husk of an old corn cob in the sun. I was burned out. That's just the best way to put it. I didn't feel like doing much of anything anymore. Old burned out hippie, you know, an old freak. I wasn't old. I was young. To a brand new environment where no one knew me and I had a chance to reinvent myself, and I was challenged. It was a good school. It was the Deep South, and I mean the Deep South. Spanish moss hanging from the trees. Humidity. Bugs. Attitudes that I just couldn't believe. Lots going on. And I said, I am going to make it here. And I buckled down. And I went from, I dropped out of school. And I went to getting almost a 4-point average. You know, taking a bunch of classes, a full load in college. And just did real well. Because it was a challenge to me. And it nourished me. And I started meeting people and having friends. It was a completely different world. And my mind began to expand without drugs, without much of anything other than just a new life. And that's what we need in life, is a challenge. We need that nourishment that that world can give us. The nourishment of being challenged by something new, challenging ourselves, finding our new world, you know? I was just completely, it was all the old tribe, none of them were there. It was just me again. And I shudder to think what my life would have been like without that. I mean, some of the old tribe didn't do very well. Just didn't do well at all. I persisted with some of them. You know, some of my old patterns. I think that my whole world might have been completely different if I hadn't stayed with some of the things that I was really insistent upon. Oh, I'll just put it bluntly. If I hadn't insisted on a relationship, one in particular that I really thought was necessary, I might have had a completely different career. I might have had a career academically. I might have gone on and on and on to what I wanted, which was to be an Egyptologist. But at the same time, I don't think I would have been happy in that world because they would not have liked my direction, which was the occult. I met some Egyptologists and talked to them about my interest in the occult, and they did not like it. Period. Full stop. End of story. Especially my interest in ancient Egyptian religion and the magic there, which now would be accepted much better, I think, but still with a side-eye glance, so to speak. But it would have been a challenge, and I think I might have done okay being an Egyptian. It might have been a little more tolerated, or not. Maybe it would have been abhorred even more. See, but that's why we do things. We have to challenge ourselves. We who are into this metaphysical realm are challenging society just by the very fact that we are who we are, and we do what we do, and we're interested in what we're interested in. That's the basis of it. You know, we have to stretch ourselves. The first time we said to someone, yeah, I'm taking a tarot class, Or I'm teaching a Turo class. You know. You're what? Yeah. What do you mean? Well, I'm going to learn to read the cards. Or I'm teaching how to read the cards. And well, what do you mean, read the cards? Well, you know. We have to stretch ourselves. And we have to stretch our abilities. Because in that road to mastery, we have to leave something behind. We have to leave behind the mundane. How many people do you know who can whittle a chain out of a piece of wood? Now, you may know someone. Oh, yeah, I've got an uncle. He can do that. Or my dad used to be able to do that. Or, you know, my grandpappy used to be able to do that. Or I know no one who can do that. Or maybe you know that you can do that. Because that's a masterful thing to be able to do. To be honest, in this day and age, there aren't that many people who can do that. However, in foreign countries, there are a lot of people who can do that. Why? Because there are still master workmen who can do stuff like that. I'm always impressed when I see some of these YouTube things or whatever they are. I don't do the TikToks and stuff like that. I know I'm old. Trust me, I know I'm old, but I see things and incredible artwork and incredible abilities that people have to do things. Oh, let me just warn you, if I get the news that the puppy needs to go out, I'm going to put on some incidental music that will just play over and over again until I get back. Okay, that's very important because we're house training. Very important. Anyway, when you see a master, I mean, you know, the apprentice system used to be like 7 years, you know, that thing. But it probably took a lifetime to truly master something. It's fascinating to me that people don't even try sometimes. I used to play darts many, many, many years ago. I used to hang out at a pipe shop. You wouldn't believe what it takes to master the art of lighting a pipe properly. I know that sounds really like, oh, it's such a big deal. You know, I don't know what that voice was. Sounds like a Yeti. But it's really not easy. We used to have contests where you would be given a quarter ounce of tobacco, or whatever it was, a pinch of tobacco, and two matches. Two cedar matches, get that. And whoever could keep their pipe lit the longest would win some paltry, you know, like a pouch of tobacco, you know, a saran wrap bag filled with tobacco. And these were big deals. We would sit around and whoever could do it, you know, I got pretty good at it. I got real good at it. Because I'm obsessive. But there's a mastery to it. I mean, you have to be able to... It's a big deal. There's technique. And that's the other side of this. Is that there are techniques to everything. And I have always been one for technique. Trying to find the best technique to do everything. Whether it be painting, whether it be drawing. But there's tricks of the trade. Cartooning. I'm a cartoonist. I like to cartoon. There are all sorts of tricks to cartooning. How do you make something look like it smells bad? You draw little wavy lines coming off of it. That's it. You've seen it in cartoons. How do you make something look like it hurts? Well, you draw a little crosshatch on it sometimes. Or how do you make something, you know, flies? You know how to draw flies, right? And it's all little tricks. Well, that's kind of what life is about, isn't it? The little tricks that there are. So, what do you want to master? You probably don't want to master, you know, lighting up a pipe and making it last for an hour. that's probably not your thing, or 2 hours, or whatever. What is it? Obviously, maybe it's drawing. And here's the key. You have to expect to fail. Failure is a part of mastery. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to fail along the way. That's one of the greatest parts of it. You don't learn from success. You learn from failure. That's just how it goes. I sure have. I've learned more. It's the old saying. It's true. You do learn more from failure than you do from anything else. But the benefits are absolutely incredible. And you learn so much from the benefits. Boy, howdy do you. Boy, howdy doody. What are the benefits? Well, one of the major benefits of striving for mastery is mastery itself. The first time someone called me a tarot master, it was Mark Husson. He called me a tarot master, and I blushed. I thought, and yeah, I did blush. I'm swarthy, but I did blush. Because I thought, who's he calling a master? And it took me a long time to accept that. Because I thought, well, who's he, you know, but I did. I am. I've earned it. I've created my own tarot deck. Yeah, I've earned it. So when someone says you're a master, and you realize, oh, you know what? Yeah, I guess I am. And mastery comes to you, and you recognize that, you're in a pretty good place. I've known master bridge players, ranked. I've known master chess players. My uncle was one of the Egyptian grandmasters of chess. And he didn't tell me that until after 3 or 4 years of absolutely wiping me down time after time after time playing chess. And I was just a kind of a beginning chess player. And he would just obliterate me. I mean, it was horrific, the things he did to me playing chess. And I'd say, how do you do this? He said, well, I think at least 10 and sometimes 20 or 30 moves ahead. And I said, what? He said, oh, yeah, I'm Egyptian grandmaster for years. And I'm, why don't you tell me this? Guy used to, when I worked at Jack in the Box, guy I played chess with did the same thing to me. I mean, he just tore me up one side, down another. He said, oh, did I not tell you that I was Colorado State champion 5 years in a row? And you just want to throttle these guys, you know, but you don't. It's just what they do. They just don't tell you. It's just, oh, yeah, click, you know, take your, oh, this is, by the way, checkmate in 3 moves. And it's like,
you did that again.
Gosh, I don't know. I thought we were playing checkers, you know. So I don't play chess anymore. I used to play with a genius. He was literally a world-class genius. He was 14 years old in my high school. Yeah. So I'll tell that story some other time. Anyways. Yeah, well. So the benefits of mastery are the possibility of ending up a master. Just don't play chess with grand champions when they don't tell you. It's not fair. Not fair. But you do end up learning a few things. Number one, you're just not up to it. And also, you might find a lifelong passion. I have absolutely done that. Like I said, I like calligraphy. It happens to be what I'm working on now. I'm a fan of Spencerian script. Spencerian handwriting. It's a bit pedantic. It's a bit obsessive, but then so am I. And I like it. It's fancy. It's not overly fancy. It's not like copperplate. Copperplate, which is also known as round hand, which was very, very fancy and a sort of business hand in the late 1800s in Britain, and here as well. But can't remember his first name, a guy named Spencer. And he was for hire. Oh, that's obscure. Come on, that's obscure. But a very nice script, and it looks good. But I always then take whatever I've learned, and italic bread, you know. Here. Anyway, so I like it. I like my handwriting to be legible so that when I go back to it, I can actually read my notes and know what I was trying to say. Because sometimes I'll go back and I'll go, what is this? I used to keep a notebook by my bed so that I could wake up in the middle of the night and write down the ideas I had because I thought they were so brilliant. And one morning I woke up and I noticed I had written something down in the middle of the night, and I had just written down, keep the goat around. And I thought, what? Keep the goat around? And it's like, what? You know, and I thought, is that the goat of Mendes or what the goat? No idea. So I don't do that anymore. Yeah. But some people must get something out of it. I didn't. So you might find something you love, like writing. I doodle. But I also just like to write letters. And you know what pangrams are? They're, you know, the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog, you know, where it uses all the letters of the alphabet. My favorite is Sphinx of Black Quartz, judge my vow. That's my favorite one. There are others, like something about a jug, but that's my favorite. Sphinx of Black Quartz, judge my vow. That's my favorite. I mean, why wouldn't it be? Yeah. So better than the quick brown fox. So you can do lots of those and just write. I love to just write and write in these different hands. I'm still looking for my hand, as they say, but that's a lifelong passion. Mastery. I'm still trying to master the perfect Pacific Northwest ovoid form. I haven't gotten it yet. If you look it up, you'll see what I'm talking about. It's not easy. You might find something that catches you and just won't let go of you, like sharpening a knife. I'm still trying to master sharpening a knife. I've been working on it since I was 9 years old, and I still can't do it right. But I'm going to get it someday, or I won't. But it's a lifelong passion for me. It's a challenge, you see. What's another benefit of trying to master something? Self-fulfillment, self-knowledge. You learn so much about yourself. Self-confidence. When you finally get something down, great honk. It's one of the best things that you can do. You know yourself so well. And when you like playing a ney, an Egyptian ney, or a Turkish ney, I can do that now. Or an Anasazi flute, I can do that. Boy, it's not like I walk around and say, hey, by the way, you want to hear this? You know, hoo, 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 you know, you don't do that. But I can do it. I can do it. And the joy of the experience itself, you know, when I can sit down with my concertina and annoy anyone alive, I mean, there's really something to that. Or my ukulele, and truly make people weep out of pure frustration. I love it. I've been playing the uke since I was 19 years old. And I love it. And I'm not a master of it. But I play what I like. I can play Chattanooga Choo Choo. Can't do it on the air because I don't have the rights. Well, I'm managing it's 70 years old. Pardon me, I gotta take a drink here. 70 years old, oh yeah. but I don't. Nah. I got a gal in Kalamazoo. I think it's 70 years. Maybe it's 90. I don't want to torture everybody. I mean, there are songs I love to sing. And I'll get the uke out. I actually sing Grateful Dead songs, too, on the uke. Now, if that isn't sadistic, nothing is. You get joy out of it. You get experience out of it. And believe it or not, when you try and master something, you gain a lot of wisdom because you find out what's real and what isn't. There's an old saying amongst magicians. A magician will always be fooled by a trick he doesn't learn. And it is the truth. I once had the pants fooled off of me by a magician, world-famous magician, but a magician nevertheless, who did a trick for me that absolutely blew my mind. I thought I was going to go into a coma. I was so fooled. And it was a trick that I had read in a book that I owned more than once. But because I had never tried it, he fooled me. Blew my mind, had me drooling for days and days. How did he do that? Oh my God! Oh my God, how did he do that? It was outdoors. He did something with coins I couldn't believe. He had a coin fall out of the sky into my hands. He had a whole, it looked like I looked up on a building to see if someone had thrown it from the roof of the building. It was the most unbelievable thing that ever happened. And the guy who owned the magic shop had sold me the book. And he finally said, page 48 of Bobo's. I don't know what page it was, but it was Bobo's coin magic. And I said, what? He said, you're driving me crazy, Mo. Just go to that page, for goodness sake. And I went to that page, and I read it that night, and I went, oh, you've got to be kidding me. You will always be fooled by the trick you don't learn yourself. Mastery. You do it, and you find out that it fooled you because you didn't try it yourself. That's the beauty of mastery. Once you try it, you find out whether it works or not. You find out whether it's bogus or whether it's the real thing. That's why it's worth trying. You believe in magic or you don't believe in magic? Give it a try. Try to master it. Trust me, once you get into it, you'll know whether it's real or not. I'm a believer. It's one of those things I've done a lot of, worked toward. I'll leave it to you to find out yourself. I'm a true believer, right? And you also find out, oh no, I'm not gonna spend a whole lot of time in my life. You know, I'm gonna let life work itself out. It's the best thing to do, you know? There's so many things in life that are worth trying to master. You know, if you get good at things. If you get good at things that make you money, you'll make a lot of money. But if you get good at things in life that make you happy, you'll be really happy. Except for the little tragedies that come along in life, I'm a really happy man. And even after they happen, and they do happen, you get happy again. And I'm a happy man. I've been a happy man for a long time. I urge you, find something to master. Don't be afraid. Never fear that. Because so what if you don't master it? At least you've tried it. And you'll have fun. I guarantee you will have fun. Learn how to cook a good jambalaya. That's always worth it. I suggest the Cajun, but you may like the Creole. It's all what you like. And I like you. Otherwise, I wouldn't do this. And I promise you that. And I promise it's all going to get better. It always does. Until next week. It's me, Mo. Not me, Ma. It's me, Mo. Wishing you peace and love. And my friends, true happiness and mastery. Talk to you later. Peace and love. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. I am Mo Abdelbaki, and today is Wednesday, the 12th of July. July, yeah, 2023. Oh, the year is just speeding by, isn't it? Isn't it? Already the 7th month of the 23rd year of the 21st century. And to think, just a moment ago, I was in Mrs. Parsons' fifth grade class at Laurel Elementary in Fort Collins, Colorado. Okay, go ahead, those of you listening who want to steal my identity. I won't get you that far. And now that's been a challenge. And they'll go, yes, yes, I can do everything. Well, go ahead. I mean, really, it's the world today. Oh, the world today. Isn't it a sorry place? It's not that bad. It's weird. A lot of strange goings on. There are good people left in the world. There are good people left in the world, which was proven to me recently. Thank you again. You know who I'm talking to. So, what should we talk about today? How's the weather been? How are you feeling? How has your weather been? Wow. To those of you in Vermont, and I know that there are a couple of listeners in Vermont, Montpelier, and Vermont is a destination place. It's a destination state where people go to, like Colorado. People come to Colorado to see the mountains and to, you know, buy rock candy, because we have lots of mountains and lots of rocks, and they make candy that looks like rocks. And it's good. We have saltwater taffy in Estes Park, and of course, I'm not sure what that has to do with the mountains, but it's pretty good stuff. And in Montpelier, Vermont, they have flooding, and that's Vermont is the same sort of thing. A lot of tourism. And this is the most popular time of year to be.